You're good to go.
I am good to go.
Excellent. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, with season two, this episode is brought to you by the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy with the amazing Dr. Simone Alicia. There is a wealth of resources there to help with your child's self-esteem and confidence and so much more. So I'm going to put the link in the details, comments, and description below so you can have a look at that. I highly recommend it. And today we have another really exciting guest. I'm so excited, just excited to have, I always say that, very special guest. We have the lovely Nadie Fernando O'Driscoll. And she just came out. I'm going to, before I put the spotlight on her, so her new book just came out, Labyrinth of Dreams. I got it yesterday. I'm all excited. Those are my plans for the weekend. I'm going to have a look at it. But today I invited her to come on because she brings out a very important point, not only in her book, but in general, on the message of multiculturalism and the effects that has on the younger generations when there's different cultures coming into a family and the impact that has. And I'm going to let her explain because she has an amazing way to explain it. But I'll put the spotlight on you, Nadie. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, good morning, Danielle, and it's lovely to be here. And thank you. I am privileged that you thought of me and me to be your guest. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Can you, before we get going with the topic, can you briefly kind of share your story and tell us, where how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely. So, as my name suggests, as you can see from there, I'm in a multicultural or multiracial family. I was born and brought up in Sri Lanka, and I moved to Canada in 2004. But so to talk about where I am today and how I got to this point, when I was growing up, I grew up in a middle class Sri Lankan family, and my parents were from two different backgrounds as well. My mother was is from a Buddhist, somewhat nationalistic, more conservative sort of a family, and my father, his background in religion was he was a Christian, and he was way more open-minded. So me and my brother, when we were growing up, we always had this influence of the two worlds. And I can tell you straight off the bat, we thrived in the environment that our father brought into our life, which is being open and opening our minds to see that we are not the only people existing on this planet. There are other societies with different views, different ways of life, and that's not a bad thing. So, while growing up, and especially up until the point that I went to university and started working, we grew up and moved around in the same kind of society, which, and there was a beauty, the society we grew up in, the culture in Sri Lanka, it's a beautiful culture. But as with anything, there are negative aspects, right? And there are ugly sides. So most part of the Sri Lanka still has a lot of conservatism and ideologies. And some of the ugly truths about it is things like colorism and the chauvinism and the expectations that you have on women. It's very double standard. And so when you're growing up in this culture, and if you don't hear anything different, you grow up thinking, well, this is a norm, this is okay. And then you tend to propagate that, right? You put that through even in your life. But I think it was thanks to my dad. Me and my brother, we always had a different way of looking at things. And we were a little bit different in the sense that we would question if something didn't feel right or not exactly because an adult told us to do so. So that did get a lot of judgment. We did experience a lot of judgment. But while growing up, it just became a part of the life, and we thought that, you know, we were doing something wrong, but at the same time, for some reason, like if it was not explainable, if there was no
You're
logic
right.
behind that, we pushed back. But then after I went to university in India, and I met people there that had different views of life, who had different lifestyles. And then, like, you know, it sort of opened my mind up further. And then when I came back to Sri Lanka, I started working, and then my horizons expanded. And then I started seeing things differently, like, you know, all these unrealistic expectations that the society has on you. And I started questioning, not only questioning, I started pushing back on that. So the end result of that was there was a cost attached with Danielle. Both me and my brother, we were pariahs in that society. Not everyone, though. I got to make that distinction. It's only a segment of the society that holds on to these archaic norms and values. And for the most part, people who hold on to this, they live double standard lives themselves, because unrealistic expectations are very hard to stick to, and there's no reason to stick to them, right? So they themselves stray, they themselves don't always follow these standards, but people who judge others, they tend to hide their act. And that's something that I realized. But at the same time, what we did, instead of pushing back and talking about it, we created this bubble around us. We surrounded ourselves with people that are like-minded, open-minded, and then we went on about our life. And then when we talk about these experiences that we have, we laugh about it, saying, "Oh my goodness, that's a part of the society, and how crazy is it is." But we really didn't do anything about it. So that was my life up until this year. And then this book happened. So the reason that I wrote this book is it's a personal experience. Surrounds lives of people who had fallen victim to these social biases. But what really got me going was the fact that in 2024, a child could be victimized, a human being could be victimized and marginalized simply for being adopted. That reality hit hard. And then all these experiences that I have had, my friends have shared with me, they all sort of, you know, came bubbling up to the surface. And I felt like it's not okay to be quiet. It's not okay. And I felt this need to do something about it. So I started with writing this book, Labyrinth of Dreams. And through that, I found a way to raise awareness to some of these issues that is embedded in our societies, near and the human cost of these archaic social biases. And so that's my story. That's where I stand. So through this book, I wanted to create a platform and start talking about it. And even if I can get one person to think about their action before they pass judgment on someone else, one person to change their lives for better by being confined into these shackles of these archaic societies or these unrealistic expectations, well, that would be a win for me. So that's my story, and here I am.
Such an incredible story. And you touch on so many important points there, the double standards of staying rigid in your cultural values that themselves are evolving, but some people will stay kind of attached to the old values and they're not progressing. And that's kind of leads up to my next question, because we've talked about this before. I'm also part of a I come from a multicultural family. Although we were from the outside, you would think you're the same culture, but the culture itself is subdivided into different cultures, kind of like you were saying, it's the same thing. And it's the it's not necessarily the cultural values that, because the children that come from these families are torn between the two. And without knowing it, like you say, the things that you say, because that's your normal, that's all you've always heard, you've always had heard these comments, it affects the children because now they're one side of the family is talking against their other side of the family. But in terms of, not being the cultural values, but the parental expectations, they are expecting their children to keep up with these traditions or certain ways of thinking, but it's evolving. So the children are stuck in that where there's no, it's not realistic to what is happening now, especially for families that are moving abroad. And then this is kind of what it leads to, those to the children that are stuck between the two, the so-called new world and then the old ways. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and the impact it has on the children?
Absolutely, and I have so many examples in my life, like family and friends that I see. So to sort of break it down, most of the time when parents, it's the parents who decide to make this move, right? So they are leaving behind a life that they are familiar with. And they are leaving behind people that they love and they grew up with. And they are coming into a world for a reason. They obviously thought that there is something better in the world that they are coming into, right? And again, it's a very complicated situation, and you can't really paint everything with the same brush. It also goes down to the background that they are coming from, not essentially the country or the society, but their own backgrounds as well. So say that people who come from a very rigid background, very conservative values, and they're moving into a part of the world or a society that is quite different, very different. Well, then there itself, there is a huge gap, right? And the people who move, the parents who move from there, now they are leading from fear. They're raising their kids with the fear that they are going to be different than what they know of the society or the families that they grew up in. That is different than what the society that their children they are growing up in. And they more often than not, they don't know how to relate to this. And then they are creating these silos. They are saying, okay, well, you shouldn't move with these people. You shouldn't, this culture is not acceptable. And this is not good. And the culture that we left behind, and these are the values that you ought to follow. So now think of a child that is going into kindergarten or the school, now automatically, even without realizing, the child has this perception in his head, well, there's something wrong with my friends, there's something wrong with this society. So, I can't go for sleepovers, I can't really hang out with them. And then they go home, and then it's a whole different reality back there, right? So they don't even know, but then they have this, it's going to be instilled in them that you have to have duplicity in your life. You and the outside, when you go to the society, you behave a different way, and then you come home, and within your confinements of your approved family members and the communities, then you behave differently. So, how is that child ever going to feel comfortable in his or her or their own skin? And you see this even as adults, superficially, they seem to be like doing really well. They are moving around in the society, making friends, but you take those layers off and you see the insecurities bubbling. And then you take parents who move here with teenagers.
That's a whole other story.
What a
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because the social circles are so important at that age, but now they're being told that they can't be part of that. So it's traumatizing for most children.
It is. And like you are like from the get-go, you're creating an individual that has insecurities. They're always going to feel like, well, this is not exactly my culture. This is not exactly who I should be. Right? And then they're not going to feel a true sense of belonging there ever. And then that's going to perpetuate. They are always going to hang out with people that are like-minded or look like them, or that the society that their parents expected them to move around in. So you don't assimilate, and then you are creating division, and that's going to become a whole nother problem that has to be discussed in a whole different platform. But
And it does create a duality within the same that child. That's the experience I've had growing up, and what I see in schools as well is what happens is the child has this mind that this new culture is not the best and that you should avoid it as much as possible. But then they get to meet individuals from that culture that show are the complete, they're not a threat. They are like them. They have the same interests. They are kind. They are interesting, and now they're thinking, what's wrong with me if I think that they are okay? So they're really, really torn. And what I've seen as well personally in my own family, but also in schools, a lot of the times those children are kind of forced to turn their back on one of their cultures, and they will favor one over the other because they can't be juggling those all the time, and they still don't feel comfortable because they are part of this new world that their parents just brought them into. And if they go and travel back home, they're not part of that world either, and they're told that they're not part of that world. So it's such a commotion for whether they're young children or adolescent. It's difficult to handle all of that.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you said that, because I gotta share this. I have a friend of mine who is actually about 5 6 years younger than me. She moved to the Middle East with her parents when she was really young. But I grew up in Sri Lanka as a teenager up until I started university. So, and then from the Middle East, they moved to Canada when she was a teenager and in high school. So, but the dynamics of her parents, they are very, very conservative. And they are still, when they moved to the Middle East, they were stuck in the 60s and 70s of the Sri Lankan society. Even at that time, they seemed very conservative and a little bit different. So now they carried that ideology into Middle East, and they moved around in circles that had same kind of expectations and same kind of upbringing. All the while in Sri Lanka, in the culture that I grew up in, that culture evolved. It changed.
Right.
So when my friend tells me how stringent her parents were and the expectations that her parents had of her and what was right and wrong, I'm shaking my head. I'm like, well, I'm 5 years older than you, but no, that didn't happen.
Yeah,
my parents didn't expect, my friends did, parents didn't expect that out of, your parents are really stuck in their ages. And now imagine they came to Canada.
Yeah.
And now they are 4 or 5 generations behind in the way that they want to raise their kids. So the kids had no home.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And it's even the language from my experience. The language evolves. So you're going back, and it, the last time, and I lived it 2 ways in my own hometown. I am from Canada, Northern Canada. The language there is still French, but unless you're from there, you won't understand it. And I went back to visit with to show my kids where they were. We're up in the mountains, and somebody was talking to me, and I couldn't even understand them, and I couldn't hear I couldn't figure it out. And my children's father, whose French is his third language, he understood everything, and he's looking at me going, what's wrong with you? This is your mother tongue. I'm an alien in my own hometown right now. And so it's not just culturally, but everything, the language,
yeah.
the the ways, even the way they dress, it changes. And then we live the same thing with my husband's culture, where I learned the language from back in the 1990s when I met him. But going back in the 2000s and the 2010s, the language has evolved. So even when I speak, they kind of laugh, but they don't laugh at me. But you know what I mean? Like, they just kind of like, I'm speaking the old school,
Yes.
language. Like, I'm almost sounding like Shakespeare to them. And so it's just funny. We laugh about it. Like you say, you kind of laugh about it, but it's a reality that,
It's a real evolution, right, Danielle? I mean, that's
yeah.
the basis of life, evolution. It is gonna.
It is. It's needed. Yeah. And that kind of leads me to the next question. From your experience, you talked earlier about having to open up your mind to this new way and this evolution. What would your advice be to parents to say, let's start opening up our field of vision a little bit to help our children feel like they belong so that they can feel rooted into something?
Lead with hope and not fear. So when you really start digging deep and try to understand why they are holding on to certain values, as they call it, I find most of the time it's the fear. So, for an example, like at the time that I was in school in Sri Lanka, you, a teenager, you're not supposed to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. That's frowned upon. It's like if you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, well, you are bad. And you could get into trouble in school for that. But how many of my friends, including me, do you think really true? It's healthy. That is a healthy aspect of growing up life, right? But I think where this comes from, if you really dig down to the roots of it, is parents are scared of their children perhaps getting pregnant or finding themselves in an undesirable situation. So open your mind as to what the real reason you're doing it. And make sure your kids have the knowledge and the tools not to be in a undesirable situation. And if your fears are really driven by a deep down cultural value, think and understand if it is really apt, if there's any logic behind this. A woman back in the day was expected to be a virgin until the day she gets married. And from the day, I am pretty sure that human civilization came to Earth, there were people who didn't follow that.
Yes, you're right.
Instead of thinking of reconstruction surgery or thinking that your child is somehow going to be tainted, be practical. And if it is really, really, really deep-rooted, talk to your children and tell them that these are your values. But be prepared to give your child an opportunity to be their authentic self. Don't try to control children for their every movement. Don't try to live vicariously through them. Give them an opportunity to find out what they are good at, what they want to do, be comfortable there in their own skins. So at the end of the day, just allow your kids to be kids in their authentic self.
I love that, and it's so true. It's something that I touch on as well, is you have to respect that your child will have their own values. You kind of pass on your values to your child, but they're their own person, like you say, authentic self. They're going to discover their own, and you need to be able to respect that. I love it. That's a such an important thing. And you want your children to get the information from you rather than maybe some undesirable influences as well, because they don't feel comfortable coming to you for some questions or concerns that they may have. And then they get the wrong information, and I would rather my children come to me so I could give them, even if I'm not open to whatever conversation they're bringing up, at least it comes from a place of love rather than possibly manipulation or, exploitation in some sense. So it's very important. I like that advice. I could talk to you about this for like all day, but let's get into your book. I'm gonna show Hope. I'm gonna be talking so that they can see it on the screen. But we have, and it's inverted, so I apologize. But Labyrinth of Dreams, this is your baby that just came out not too long ago. Can you tell us a little bit more? You introduced it earlier, but can you just talk to us a little bit more about your book? And it is available on Amazon, by the way, so you can check it out.
Thank you, Danielle. So this book, oh my goodness, it was born out of a desire to make sense of certain characters that were personal to me. And the story started with the character in this book, Sakura. Well, just to be clear, these names are not the actual names of the characters. It's fiction based on on true events. But Sakura, in her close to 50, she receives this letter from her mother, Helen, in which she reveals to her that she has a sister that was born exactly a year before she was born, and that their father, who also happened to be the father of that child, forced the mother to give her up for adoption. So when I started writing this story, it was to make sense of these characters and understand why they did what they did. Because Father Peter was he has passed on at that time, and so he wasn't available to tell his side of the story, right? And he was a great father. He was a great father, great teacher, great uncle. And so it was really hard for Sakura to understand and sort of figure out why they did. So the story started with that. And then as I was writing that, like all these social issues, what forced Helen to go ahead with this decision, and the social issues that after 50 years, still grappling the society that is standing to victimize that child who was given up for adoption, Mala. That really is what took a turn in my direction, made me change direction as to the message that I want to drive. It was not just a story at that point, it became a mission, a platform. So the novel is about story, the lives of Helen and Peter, and why they gave up the child adoption. And then the story is about Mala, who is facing the challenge of living in a society that is set and ready to judge her and victimize her simply for being an adopted child, and how she's going to handle that. And through this story, I wanted people to start thinking about those situations. It's are very real, and I have alluded to a lot of experiences, a lot of incidents that I know had happened in Sri Lanka. I know has happened to my friends, my family. So I want people to read it, not just read it as a novel, but think of those experiences, think of those incidents, instances, and think if they are okay.
That's such a powerful message to come across a book is imagine if this was your life, your reality at that point. You're the one who gets told that you have a sibling that you didn't know about and the conditions. And I just have shivers thinking about it. This is I received the book yesterday when I got home in the evening, and I was like, okay, this is my weekend. I'm reading this. I know that because we had the opportunity to speak about the story and all of the reality within the story. And that's one of the reasons why I went into early childhood education was the reality, the injustices that are thrown at children because the adults don't want to hold themselves accountable for their actions. So now it becomes a child's problem. So it's kind of the same reason why I chose us to give a voice to the people that don't are not allowed to have a voice. And it's so important. Thank you so much for sharing that. And again, I encourage everybody to have a look at that book and order it online. It is available on Amazon. And I know you've shared quite a bit about your story. You got very personal as well with some of your experiences, but can you share something with us that people may not know about you? A little something could be a hobby or something that people may not know about you that you'd like to share.
Oh my goodness. No, I can't sing for life to save myself, but I love singing. Love singing, and I often torture my husband and my daughter with my singing.
Yes. I it. That's why I work with children. They don't judge us when we sing. I can sing at the top of my lungs and they'll be like, "Small."
I'm embarrassing. Yeah,
I love it. I love those kind of shares. We are not alone.
keep singing. It's beautiful.
Keeps. That's right. It makes you happy. Go ahead and sing. Everybody else can just put earplugs in. I love it. I love that. I'm gonna throw another question at you. Is there any advice you wish you would have had in life, like to sooner, to make your life a little easier, or something? Advice you'd like to give your children to make their lives a little easier?
So to my daughter, well, it's twofold that question. To my daughter, I will tell her, like, as long as it feels right to you and you're not hurting another person, go pursue that dream.
Yes.
I don't want to just say pursue your dreams per se, because you are, as a part of the society, you have a responsibility not to hurt another person. You know,
Yes.
so, yeah, for her, be yourself. And achieve what you want to achieve, but be good.
As long as you're not hurting anybody, I love that. That's such an important, it holds you accountable
Yeah.
for your actions. I love that. Yeah.
And as for me, Danielle, I don't know. The reason that I say is I am not the same person that I am today, 2 years ago, even a year ago. So whatever that anyone might have had to tell me, or the advice that might not have been applicable to me at that time. So I strongly believe that I am where I am supposed to be, with all the warts, the mistakes, and everything. And I definitely have chewed more than bitten off more than I can chew. But here I am, and this is me. And so, to answer that question is nothing really. Like, not to say that I'm too arrogant to say that I don't want advice. That's not the point of it. No. The point of this is to say I don't know the answer to as what anyone could have told me before, because I don't know if I would have listened, if I don't know if that was the right advice for me at the time. But everyone is welcome to share their opinion, give me advice today, because today is where I am at.
Yes, I like that. And it's those trials and errors that made us who we are today, I guess we could say. So, I like that answer. You're so right. It's funny how it's different for our children, isn't it? I love that we don't see it the same for ourselves. I absolutely love that. So you've accomplished something really big right now with this book, but what's next for you? Are you working on anything else? Are you thinking of other projects right now, or are you just gonna sit and kind of take it all in with this huge
Well,
milestone?
I do have a couple of other projects, like other books, stories in my mind. But for right now, I want to deliver on the promise when I wrote this book, that is to create a platform for people to bring their grievances or share their stories and opinions and start this conversation about bringing awareness to all these social issues, the stigmas and the biases that continue to victimize people throughout the world in different cultures, right? And so I want to first create that platform, establish that, and then move on to the other stories that I want to write while carrying on this mission of making change.
That'll keep you busy for a while. It's so important. We do need to have these conversations, and not just make light of it or laugh about it, but to actually do something to make it easier for people. I love that. And before we share your where people can follow your work, or I have one last question I ask all of my guests, and that is, what would you like to be when you grow up?
Oh my goodness, when I grow up.
I love that question. There's a little nine-year-old girl
Okay.
who asked me that question when, and nobody would answer, but I did. So she was all excited, and I promised her I would ask everybody I interview what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be someone who make positive change
Yeah.
society.
Yes. I love it. I love it. It's such a great question because we never get the same answer and it changes. I could ask you that question 2 years from now and might be completely different in the same area, but just different. And I love it.
I know, like 2 years ago, I would have said globetrotter, like give me a backpack and then I don't
Yeah.
traveling around. I still want to do that, by
Yeah, of course. But it's funny how 2 years feels like a lifetime, though, doesn't it? I can't believe it. In the last even 4 or 5 years for me, it's just been where I think I've lived 4 other lives since, and it's not it's it keeps going. There's going to be more to this, so it's exciting. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Chris. Again, I could keep you on the entire day if I could, but we'll have to get back together and talk about that platform of yours and how things are going. But thank you so much. And how can people reach you? I will put all the information in the description if there's a website or social media that people can reach you.
Absolutely. So I have a website. It's Nadi Fernando hyphen O'Driscoll. And then my social media, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I am working on establishing a YouTube channel. I haven't gotten that yet, but hopefully within this week or in the next couple of coming weeks, it should be available. So yeah.
I'll be sure to put all the angles in there, the handles in there for you, for people to be able to follow you or reach you. And of course, the Amazon link for your book. So don't forget, make sure you get your hands on The Labyrinth of Dreams. Such an amazing, I had the opportunity to pre-read, but now I get to read the final version of it. It was great. Thank you again, Nadi, for joining me. I love your message. I just love how, devoted you are to it. It's so important to have people that are speaking up for those who can't speak for themselves. I really appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Thank you for everybody. And for everybody watching, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to check out again, check the descriptions to get all the information on the D so you can follow her as well. And until next time, stay safe. Stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.